morning is Rice against Barnhart. Mr. Sutterfield.
Good morning, Your Honor. I'm Attorney David Sutterfield, counsel. This case turns on the district court's determination that the administrative law judge was accurate in his contention that he had thoroughly examined all of the evidence of record.
Mr. Sutterfield, where can we find the ALJ's decision?
Yeah, neither of you attached it.
Circuit Rule 30 requires it to be attached as an appendix to your brief. Your brief contains a certification that everything required to be attached is attached, but it's not there.
That is my error.
We have said that in civil cases, unlike criminal cases, a violation of Rule 30 leads to summary affirmance, because you have deprived us of the tools of decision. We have to decide whether substantial evidence supports the ALJ's decision, and you chose to withhold it from us. Why isn't that the end of this case?
Well, I would certainly ask on equitable arguments that it is part of the record that you do have, and that would be set forth at the transcript pages 11 through 16.
I don't think lawyers who lie to the Court of Appeals have much of an equitable argument, and you lied to us when you certified that everything required by Rule 30 had been included in your brief.
That could be a position. I don't accept that position. I accept that it was not attached and that my certification at the time was made with the representation that I had complied with Rule 30. I do concede that I have not complied with Rule 30 in view of the fact that it did not attach to the decision. The decision is part of the record.
That's standard definition of a lie. You assert one thing, it's important, that is material, and it's false.
I stand on my earlier response, Your Honor. If I may, again, I believe that the contention by the administrative law judge is not unlike the child that sits on Santa's lap and asks if you ate all your vegetables, he said yes. That did not happen in this instance. The administrative law judge's decision is replete with omissions. There are three distinct impairments that aren't discussed: herniations at the L5-S1 level, C2-3C, C3 level, the C3-C4 level, and additionally, the nerve root impingement at the L4-L5 level is not discussed, and the possible disc herniation at the C4-C5 level is not discussed. Each of these are separate impairments, and for them to not make their way into the decision in and of itself is ample evidence that the administrative law judge did not thoroughly examine all of the evidence.
You know, I must say, I think we have a lot of evidence here that she has some real things wrong with her. But Dr. Kelly didn't seem to put it together. Isn't that a problem?
It would be a problem if we looked at the case in the context of the administrative law judge's decision, responsibility to pull it together. Dr. Kelly is not looking at this case from the standpoint of whether or not this is a claimant seeking Social Security disability benefits. That's the administrative law judge's decision, responsibility. And so I don't think it would be an appropriate analysis of this case to say, well, gee, we've got a problem with what Dr. Kelly has done. What we have is we have an administrative law judge who, from the get-go, did frame the case in the context of the list of impairments. And then with that, we have a cascade of evidence that is enumerated in that criteria under the listing that's never considered with regard to pain. That's a consideration. Zero of the nine clinical manifestations of pain are discussed. With regard to muscle spasm, it's discussed at one time in the clinical record, never discussed. significant range of motion of the spine. Discussed 9 times in the clinical record, never discussed in the decision. Appropriate radicular distribution of sense of motor loss and muscle weakness. It's described 16 times the record, twice it's mentioned, and it would be a favorable consideration to the extent that it is mentioned. And the same would be true with regard to sensory loss, which is mentioned the one time that it is in the clinical record. And on reflex loss, the administrative law judge mentioned it one time versus the 5 times set forth in the clinical record. So when we have a listing that is ignored and we don't even know what we're talking about, it goes back to my earlier example of the child saying, well, gee, I eat all my vegetables, and really we have the child's eating nothing but dessert. In other words, they're not even on the same page. And that's where we have a problem here, is that the decision is so lacking in terms of following that framework that, and we look at the bushel basket full of evidence that's ignored, that all favorable, including 3 distinct impairments and possibly 2 others that add on top of it, becomes very problematic. That's compounded by the administrative law judge making an extremely big deal about getting the electromyogram study. And he receives it and ignores it. And that's, again, it's showed bilateral radiculopathy with an axial involvement. And again, the ALJ himself, I feel objective evidence like the EMG is always very important at page 24 of the decision set forth in the record. In the transcript. We have the bone spur that's omitted, that's shown on the MRI. And then we juxtapose that with the ALJ's ultimate finding that the claimant is capable of performing medium work, and the justification states that the claimant cooks, does dishes, takes out the trash, goes to church, participates in the choir, and reads books.
Of course, the SSA admitted that the ALJ made an error in finding that she was fit for medium work, but argues that the error is harmless and then takes the position that she's capable of light work.
Well, we're here, I think, to see what the administrative law judge determined, not what has been argued in terms of what the government says. Well, we're going to do this reanalysis, and we'll tell the court how it should have been decided by the judge. Again, if the judge's decision is not supported by substantial evidence, then the proper recourse would be to remand it to the administrative law judge. The other thing I think is significant here, and you see it time and time again, it's noted in my brief with regard to district court cases, I think it would be important for this court to note that this administrative law judge played doctor, and you see these pat phrases with regard to these back impairments. There's no weight loss, there's no muscle atrophy, which is belied by the record, and there's no problems concentrating. The administrative law judges need to do their job as administrative law judges. They need to allow the doctors to act as doctors, and that's a problem here. Finally, with regard to when we look at the evidence that's omitted, and the administrative law judge placing a significant amount of weight on Dr. Patel's determination that there's no nerve root compression, when Dr. Patel's clinical records demonstrate that he never made any examination consistent with that, that he never looked at any objective medical evidence, that would be, there's certainly no substantial evidence supporting that, and it's, again, inappropriate when you consider the plethora of other evidence that clearly supports the claim that was ignored by the administrative law judge. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Garin.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is James Garin, and I represent the Commissioner in this matter. Ms. Rice has raised 2 broad areas in which she's challenging the Commissioner's decision, and those are articulation.
Let me say, before you get going, that although there isn't any rule that says that a government agency should make good on the other side's deficit in not providing us with the ALJ's opinion, we certainly would appreciate assistance. It is the focus of this case. The appellant chooses not to present it to us for mysterious reasons, and you say it was fine, but again, without putting it before us. When I read this brief when I read these briefs, I didn't have any access to the record. I was 3,000 miles away. It was impossible for me to get it. And it's one reason why our rules require that it be provided in this way. And it sure would help if the United States would provide these things when the other side falls down.
I agree, Your Honor, and I believe that the government should have provided it when we recognize that it's not included in this rights brief. And we will certainly...
Your voice, by the way, is inaudible.
Oh, I'm sorry. I agree with you, Your Honor, and we will certainly include it in the future if we notice, when we notice that the plaintiff has not included it. Thank you. As I started to say, the two broad issues in this case are whether the ALJ in this case articulated adequately his reasons for his decision and whether he properly weighed the evidence. Ms. Rice is advocating, as we mentioned in our brief, a mechanical articulation requirement at step three of the sequential evaluation process. Specifically, she says that this court should remand the case because the ALJ did not identify which listing he considered in finding that she was not disabled at step three. The purpose of the listings under the Social Security sequence of analysis is to identify certain impairments at certain degrees of severity that are per se disabling. And it's for this reason that a claimant must satisfy all of the criteria set forth in the listing. In this case, Ms. Rice has not attempted to prove that she actually met any listing. The ALJ discussed listing 105C at the hearing. Ms. Rice's attorney argued that the ALJ rejected it. The second issue, of course, is whether the ALJ, whether she actually met the listing, and I believe that we've shown that she did not. Finally, I'd just point out that this court recently, in its case in Sheck, reaffirmed its decision that the state agency doctor's analysis of the case provided conclusively established that the claimant did not meet or equal listing. Regarding the residual functional capacity of Ms. Rice,
you know what the problem for me at any rate is? There were serious differences of opinion about radiculopathy, muscle weakness, loss of sensation, limited range of motion, few other things. And I don't think the ALJ gave a cogent reason for accepting the opinion of the state doctors and rejecting the treating physicians here.
Well, Your Honor, what the ALJ is required to do, of course, is identify limitations. The ALJ, as Mr. Sutterfield says, isn't really qualified to make medical determinations. And so the ALJ surveyed the medical evidence and attempted to identify what sorts of limitations would be caused by the various impairments. And he recognized that Ms. Rice had a severe impairment. As that term is used in the term of art by the agency, but he also recognized that the only real limitations identified in the record were by the state agency doctors.
I don't know. He seemed to hold it against her that she hadn't had surgery in some time and had not been advised to have surgery. I cannot begin to imagine how an ALJ would know if surgery is any indication of a level or severity of disability. I mean, it's possible, that no one advises surgery because no one thinks that surgery will relieve pain. Rather, you know, it certainly doesn't say to me that she's not in pain.
Well, Dr. Rovner, actually, I agree with you. I think that if the ALJ had based his decision on the fact, on that fact alone, that Ms. Wright had not been advised to have surgery, this would be a very problematic case. But of course, the ALJ considered a number of other factors. The ALJ considered the fact that Ms. Wright required only minimal medication. She acknowledged at the hearing that she took Tylenol 3, and she said it was on a as-needed basis. There were days when she didn't take it. This would seem inconsistent with the debilitating pain that she was alleging. The ALJ also noted, and Mr. Sutterfield has said that this constitutes playing doctor, but really it's a valid observation that there were no indications of atrophy, except for if we assume that the quarter-inch difference identified by, I believe, Dr. Kelly constituted atrophy. There was no significant weight loss. There was no evidence of concentration problems, all of which are generally recognized and have been recognized by the court as evidence of severe pain.
See, what worries me is that when I read through all of this, and you know, and of course had to go and get the opinion, and I was lucky because I'm around here. I was around here, but it seemed to me that the ALJ had this idea that unless people are writhing around in pain, you know, sort of shrieking with pain, that, well, you get the idea.
Yes, I don't think that that is the ALJ's approach here. I think the ALJ is simply attempting to identify, based on the evidence before him, What are Ms. Rice's limitations? He has to look at all the evidence. This court has held that an ALJ is entitled to consider the opinions of state agency doctors. Now, Ms. Rice has argued that the ALJ should have ignored the opinion of Dr. Patel because presumably Dr. Patel did not examine his patient. I find it very difficult to believe that a patient's physician or treating physician would deliberately understate his findings regarding her limitations and impairments.
Yeah, Dr. Patel is a general practitioner, correct?
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor.
Yeah.
We also have Dr. Kelly, who, of course, is a neurologist. Dr. Kelly had identified no limitations that exceeded those found by the state agency physicians upon whom the ALJ relied. And I'd also point out that he, going back to Ms. Rice's argument regarding the listing, the ALJ pointed out on a couple of occasions that Ms. Wright did not require the use of an assistive device for ambulation, whereas the listing that Ms. Wright claims that she meets requires a significant motor loss, among other things. Ms. Wright has identified numerous exhibits that the ALJ did not discuss. I'm not sure what to do with this. The ALJ certainly cannot discuss every single exhibit in the file, and it's our belief that the ALJ adequately addressed this. We ask the court to affirm.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Guerin.
Thank
you. Further, Mr. Sutterfield?
Great job. With regard to the listing, I don't believe it's incumbent upon appellant to come before this court and prove that the appellant meets the listing. The question is, did the administrative law judge appropriately analyze the case? The case is framed by the listing. And so when we have
the type of evidence that we have the regulations to say we're going to go through this process, and the administrative law judge ignores that process and doesn't frame the case. Again, going back to my analogy, you know, the little kid could have been telling the truth, but he's probably talking about vegetables. There's a miscommunication there in terms of what Stan is after. Did you eat your vegetables? And he says, yes, he's eating dessert. It's not up the Social Security Administration to come in here and say we don't meet the listing. That's not the issue. We're talking about did we get the evidence before the administrative law judge. Was this case fairly considered, or was this hearing really a sham? Again, I agree with Your Honor Robner with regard to lack of surgery. There's some people...
Thank you, counsel.
All right, thank you.
The case will be taken under advisement. The court will be in recess.